In our world of complex systems and local action, no one person is in charge. Instead, all members of a system need to be invited to participate and contribute.
We have 40,000 people across Pratt & Whitney that are capable of leading. They just need the opportunity and to be reminded that they can do it every day.
That's John Renahan of Pratt & Whitney. As prior head of marketing and recently named executive director of Global Digital Solutions, John is a true practitioner of leadership. He's proof that bringing humanity to work results in powerful business outcomes. John is a true host of others in the workplace. He actively creates space for people at all levels to contribute and share their voice.
And when we crafted the roles and responsibilities, there was a lot of debate across the team. And does this make sense to you? And what does it mean? And hey, here's our team philosophy. Do you agree with this? You know, what do you think? What are we missing? Does this capture what we stand for and what we believe in?
I'm Merrill MacDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. Today, I'm thrilled to have John Renahan with us. It's so fantastic to have you here. You are on day two of a new job. Can't even believe you could give us the time. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Tell me a little bit about the job.
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined Pratt & Whitney 3 years ago to lead marketing. And this is day two of a new job at Pratt & Whitney. I'm leading Global Digital Solutions. So I'm sitting here in Brooklyn, New York. United Technologies has a digital incubator here. And what they're working on is kind of all the customer-facing applications that, you know, serve our customers and military engines and commercial engines. So it's a pretty neat place to be.
Oh, I can only imagine. And of course, as our listeners will hear this, you'll probably be 2.5 weeks on the job. So you'll be an old timer by then.
Exactly. And your listeners may or may not know United Technologies. We've been around since 1925. And the division I'm a part of is named Pratt & Whitney. And so we've been building the world's most advanced jet engines for over 90 years. And we build jet engines for helicopters and turboprops and business jets, and then planes that you or I would fly, you know, Airbus and Boeing and Embraer. And then we also power a lot of the most advanced military planes, the F-22 and the F-35. So Pratt & Whitney products and services are kind of all over the place.
And it's so interesting, your mission of having an explorer's heart and a perfectionist grit. I loved that.
Thanks. Yeah. One of the things I was lucky to work on when I first got here was our brand strategy. And we have unbelievably experienced, passionate people that did a great job of helping me learn the company and our history. And so, you know, the engineering horsepower that we have and the portfolio we get to work with every day, you know, it's a inspiring mission and purpose, you know, given all the applications that we get to work on, whether it be, you know, commercial, military, or just folks that, you know, are flying their own individual planes or helicopters.
And it seems like you're in the midst of a pivotal moment right now. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's really an exciting time to be part of the company. So United Technologies made a huge bet. They invested over $10 billion in a brand new geared turbofan architecture. And what made that breakthrough so amazing is that these new engines, and there's over 400 planes flying with these engines, and we've racked up over 2 million hours of flying experience. But these new engines are 50% better on emissions and 75% quieter. And an average flight is saving up to 100 gallons of fuel. So that's a, you know, call it a 16 to 20% fuel advantage for the folks that are operating the plane. So it's a real game changer. And we've sold over 10,000 of these engines.
Wow.
But because of this ramp, we've had to hire close to, and we will be hiring up to 25,000 people over the next 10 years. So you have folks in their career that, you know, have 35, 40, 45 years of experience. But then we also have, you know, I'd say a third of our team now has 5 or less years experience with the business. So a lot of a wide range of, you know, experiences and abilities.
And when you're talking about your team, you're referring to the whole Pratt & Whitney team, not just your department, right?
Absolutely. So we have about 40,000 people globally. And those could be folks that are working on maintaining engines, and they could be in Singapore or China or Turkey. And then we have a significant presence in the U.S. with operations in Middletown, Connecticut, and East Hartford and West Palm Beach. So it's truly a global footprint.
And how are you thinking about this now as you bring on 25,000 new people? That's on a base of 40,000. So that's really dramatic. And then you mentioned you have the one end of 40 plus years experience. You've got the team that's got less than 5 years experience. How are you thinking about the knowledge transfer and the generations working together?
Yeah, I mean, we see it in action every day. So a lot of it is pretty simple solutions. Is how do you actually create the spaces for people to learn from each other? So some of the simple things we've done, and I think of my own team as an example, and the team I'm, you know, leaving in marketing, but I had folks that, you know, had been on the job less than a year, and I had one guy on my team that just hit 45 years last year. And a simple thing we did on our team and a lot of other teams are replicating is we had a daily huddle. So for 15 minutes each day, the team would come together and share some best practices and learn from each other and communicate in real time, you know, both in a room and on a conference call, so that, you know, they weren't relying on email and waiting for responses. They could count on each other at the same time every day. And that was a simple, efficient way to do things. The other thing we've done is just one way to work better across teams and departments is we've launched these sessions called Ignite. And basically that's just a one day offsite where we have folks from all different levels and all different teams. And we do some team building, but even more simply than that is, you know, create tables where the teams are sharing best practices, they're sharing stories, they're tackling real business issues and challenges. And most importantly, they're kind of all empowered to come up with better ways to operate and lead to decisions. It's a lot flatter, a lot less hierarchical. They're not waiting to be told what to do. They're actually coming up with the answers on their own, which is so much more efficient.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And how often do you do those, the Ignite group?
So we're running a monthly now. And some of them are you know, with specific independent teams. But I'd say the best ones are the ones that they're really cross-functional. And we've partnered with a local nonprofit. So at least in Hartford, we run them at a local boathouse where the local nonprofit helps with kind of low ropes, team building in the afternoon. And then a couple facilitators run the whole program in the morning. So it's really cost effective, and people usually leave the day pretty inspired and even more committed to each other and how they can help the team.
Generally, how many people would you have in one session?
So we've found that the best sessions are usually around 50 people. And so we'll do teams of, call it 6 to 8 folks at a table.
And then you give each table its own topic, it sounds like.
So we do both kind of joint discussions, which is all 50 people, but I'd say we spend more time where the tables actually engage with each other and focused around a specific business issue. So, you know, one simple activity we do is kind of like a board of directors activity. Here's a business critical issue. What would your team of six, what recommendations are, would you make, and what do you think we should do about it? And then what we'll do is actually share those great insights with the leadership team and try to put them into practice. Another simple thing that we do is, in a best practice we've found, is this year we launched almost a playbook, and commercial engines is probably our largest division in Pratt & Whitney. And so with our playbook, that was our 2019 operating plan and our team philosophy on how we work together. And so a simple activity we do in the Ignite sessions is we look at the team philosophy, and the team philosophy isn't jargon. It's more practical. These are the behaviors that we want to embrace as a team. So at Ignite, you know, in the different table discussions, they'll look at parts of the team philosophy and say, hey, one example is be efficient in meetings, presentations, and emails. And we'll say, okay, team, how are we actually doing this? You know, what's going well and where can we really improve? And you get some raw, candid feedback and ways to make it better.
And do you find, do you have a best practice in terms of the mix that's at each table?
It's random and people kind of sit where they choose. And during the day, we mix up the groups where we'll move them so they get to know more people. And I'd say the other thing that's really important is just the having people at all levels. So to have a day where everyone's on a level playing field, everyone's a key contributor, it makes it work really well. The other thing is we do kind of, it's very casual. So depending on the weather, you know, people wear shorts, jeans, that lack of formality and people's ability to be more authentic and more themselves really helps with the team dynamics.
It really sounds like a fun day.
It's fun. People come out really charged up and, again, it's not overly complicated. It's just as simple as creating the space to bring people together and make them feel appreciated and make them feel like they're a part of the solution. Cause they're the ones that, you know, we have 40,000 people across Pratt & Whitney that are capable of leading. They just need the opportunity and to be reminded that they can do it every day with their interactions with each other and with our customers.
Right. And how are you now working across your peer group to drive change?
Yeah, I'd say some of the feedback that's been really important, and I think this is consistent with every organization, is it's nice to put a team philosophy on paper or have a poster on the wall, but what do people feel every day? What are they seeing from the behaviors of leaders? You know, are in crisis mode, are we reverting back to some of our, you know, bad tendencies? Are we embracing really what we want to stand for? So I'd say the most important thing that we remind each other is just that we're modeling the philosophy that we've all signed up for. I'd say the other thing that's really important is just listening and creating the space to listen to each other, just actually listening and taking a few steps back and making time to understand maybe someone that hasn't shared before, or even more importantly, hasn't been asked before. I think it's amazing for me as I work across different teams, the valuable insights and experience that people have that they want to share, but they've just never been asked.
Do you have any suggestions for our listeners who have trouble listening? That seems to be a common theme.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same thing we teach our kids, right? I have three kids and, you know, they'll remind me if I'm not listening and vice versa.
Yeah. And that brings up an interesting point, because you talked a little bit ago about just as you're working with your peers, you remind one another when perhaps you're not modeling something that you really would like to see in the organization. And I'm curious what the culture is and how you cue each other to remind one another. Is it like, hey, buddy, you're not doing your job? What do you say?
It's a great question. And I think the highest performing teams that I've been on, whether they be in companies or on sports teams, is it's based on trust and accountability. And to develop that trust, you need to actually spend time with each other and get to know each other. I mean, another kind of simple activity is just that concept of bringing humanity to work. You know, do you know the people that you're sitting around, and do you engage each other in conversation? And again, we work in global teams, so that it's important in phone calls too. Just before you get to the meat of the business issue, you know, it's easy. How's your family? How are your friends? What happened this weekend? Just taking a few minutes there so you actually have a real relationship and you know each other, I think is foundational.
Given that you have all these new colleagues as well as colleagues that are very long tenured, what are you thinking in terms of how you lead differently to help the newer team members and also promote the knowledge sharing across all the demographics?
Yeah, one of the most important things we've done is to try to do a better job of sharing information and we almost say democratize the insights. And with the playbook that we launched, some of this we'd done in the past, other parts of it were new, but we shared our 2019 financial commitments with people, you know, at all levels. And typically in the past, that was only shared with a few people, but we wanted to make sure the entire team knew what, you know, customers and investors and all our other key stakeholders were counting on us for, so that we could all be accountable ultimately to that 2019 plan. And so we also did it a little bit differently in terms of how we shared it. It wasn't just an email that went out and here's the plan, good luck. What we did in building it, and it really helped drive alignment across the organization, is it wasn't built by two people in a room and then shipped off. There was iterations, and when we crafted the roles and responsibilities, there was a lot of debate across the team. And does this make sense to you? And what does it mean? And hey, here's our team philosophy. Do you agree with this? You know, what do you think? What are we missing? Does this capture what we stand for and what we believe in? And because of that socialization, because of that dialogue, it drove a lot more alignment. And then the other thing that was really helpful in rolling this out, and again, we are a very much a global company, is that we had in our launch party, you know, it wasn't an assembly where the president stood up and talked to everyone and everybody took notes. Again, we were in that interactive setting where people were at tables and the teams in Singapore were sitting together, and there was that exchange of dialogue. We were doing live polling, you know, interactive questions, so that it was it's more of a one team philosophy and not just a top-down dictatorship, because we're all in it together. And ultimately, to achieve these ambitious goals, we all need to know what the plan is and be key parts of the plan.
And you mentioned the playbook. What else is in the playbook beyond your financial commitments? It sounds like it's a broader document.
It's a pretty simple, straightforward document. So it's about 20 pages. It has our mission and purpose. It has our team philosophy. It has very specific commitments kind of by program. And programs for us are our engine programs. So you'll see each engine and say, hey, here are the 10 things, the 10 most important things that we need to deliver to our customers and our key stakeholders for each of these things. And then the roles and responsibilities. And so it's not long, and it's a work in progress. You know, it's something that, you know, as we all know, when you go into a year with a plan, the only thing you know is that the plan's going to change and you're going to have to adapt as things come up. But it's also a great document and resource that we'll reference quarterly, that we'll check in on with the team to say, how are we doing and what do we need to evolve and change? So it's very much a working, living document.
How did you actually develop the philosophy?
So it was interesting. When we had a draft philosophy that we'd been sharing in the Ignite sessions. And what we heard from the teams is, you know, for example, one of the early drafts was one team, one scoreboard. But when you kind of shared that high level theme with people would interpret it differently. So what was helpful for us is we would sit with different groups, call it 3 to 10 people at a time, and take them through the team philosophy and say, hey, is this how your team works now in finance? Is this how your group works in operations? Or, you know, what makes sense to you? What doesn't? And in the past, when I've seen team philosophies done, you know, it's three to five people that kind of roll it out, and there's no customer testing and feedback. So we wanted to make sure that this was real and authentic for our teams, and they understood it and believed in it. And so we ran a lot of kind of interactive sessions where people provided us candid feedback, and we tweaked it and made iterations to make it more real and understandable.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And, you know, there's the old philosophy that people love that which they create.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point, because when people saw it, they already felt like they knew it, and it wasn't just handed down to them, that they were a key part of the launch.
Yeah, and it's my baby.
Exactly.
So talk to me a little bit about how you see leaders operating on their best days and their worst days.
I think, again, whether we all find different contexts to lead, and in the different situations that we find ourselves in, and even just what's been modeled before us, so the leadership that we see around us, I think we ultimately all need to adapt our own style that works for us and to be able to flex our style given our teams. But one of the things that I've seen in bigger corporations is that you may or may not see a leadership philosophy or style that you look up to. So even if folks that you're working for or working with aren't modeling the style that you respect or that you believe in, it doesn't mean that you have to adopt their strategy. You should have the confidence and courage to kind of adopt and embrace your own authentic style. And that was hard for me. I think back to my early days at GE, and before kind of going corporate, I had run a small nonprofit for about 5 years and went back to business school for two, and then recognized that the power of corporations had to lead change in communities, and was lucky enough to get into a leadership rotational program at GE. But I remember my first 2 years at GE, I wasn't bringing my full self to work and wasn't the leader I wanted to be. And it took a while for me to kind of realize that and break out and go back to who I really was and what I stood for and being comfortable with that, rather than, you know, trying to model a style that I didn't fully believe in.
You know, and I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, particularly early in their career. And what happened that enabled you to make that switch to your authentic self? What was the trigger, or was there a trigger?
Yeah, there absolutely was. I was nominated to be in a program that's run by the Aspen Institute called the First Movers Program. And it's a 1 year kind of cohort, and they have about 20 people from a lot of different companies around the world. And you come together for a few times during the year and share best practices and kind of get taught some great curriculum. And I'd say most importantly, it's a forum where, you know, you can kind of coach and learn from each other. And I remember a specific point coming back kind of in the middle of that program, where I had a very direct conversation with my CEO at the time. And he was questioning my confidence. And I think I had just come from a session and kind of the gloves were off, and I felt like I was all in. And I said, "Hey, you know, you say I'm not confident. It's not that I'm not confident. It's that you don't create the space for alternative solutions. So I think I'm confident. I just don't think I can be my full self in meetings." And then I proceeded to kind of share my opinions on a few key strategic issues. And that was really kind of a turning point for me, because from that point forward, I realized how freeing it was to kind of be more of myself at work and share what I thought. And again, the worst thing that could have happened is that they would have fired me. And that wasn't really a fear, because I had run my own small nonprofit and knew how to survive, you know, entrepreneurially. So I wasn't really worried about that. And it actually helped me career-wise, because I helped the team make better decisions, because I wasn't afraid of holding back and didn't really care what other people thought.
And how have you then shared that experience or instilled that ability to be oneself in your own team?
Yeah, I think it's so critical for us to encourage that in our teammates, because the diversity of experience and perspective, it's been proven in a lot of case studies that it leads to better decisions. So you absolutely you have to get to know people and spend the time to understand what they think and what they can give to a team. But even simple questions like, "Hey, what are your gifts? What are your strengths? How do you think you can help our team?" And having that conversation with everybody listening, so that people know how they can contribute and know what they can count on other teammates for. And so a lot of it is just foundational, you know, things you do on a sports team, or that even kids do in school, probably in their first few weeks, that sometimes we forget in big companies. We skip those steps and get right to the projects or get right to the crisis at hand. And we forget to actually spend the time to figuring out how we work together as a team and how we bring the best out of each other.
You know, the asking people, what are your gifts? That's just a great reminder for me, because I'm reflecting back on several times where I've had those conversations where I was shocked what the response was, in that I had misinterpreted what I thought somebody was doing, but they thought it was a gift. You know, so for example, I recall we had someone on our team that everyone felt was just a naysayer, naysayer, naysayer. He was like a, you know, downer Bob. And when people went around and talked about their gifts, he felt his gift was like saving us from ourselves. And so he felt he was the only one who was ever raising the objections. So all he did was raise objections.
Yeah, he's like, come on, Meryl, I'm the voice of reason. You need me.
I know. But it gave me such a different perspective that, you know, he's not just trying to drag us down. He's actually doing this out of love, the poor guy, because we weren't responding well.
Yeah, yeah. And again, we're all on teams that are changing all the time with people leaving and new people coming on. So understanding each other, yeah, and kind of having that check-in is so important.
So I know you've also been working to have the team be much more agile and really to create a cultural shift. And so what are some of the things you've done to be flatter and more fast-paced?
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite philosophies is create opportunities for the experts to be experts. So again, in a hierarchical corporation, oftentimes there's a tendency to brief someone, and it's completely inefficient. And it's just much better to have the actual expert in the room sharing the info in real time rather than going through all kinds of layers. And that seems like a simple concept, but getting people comfortable with that sometimes takes a while. And that's, a lot of it comes from the desire for people think that they need to know everything. And it's just, it's not true. It's okay to say that you don't know. And hey, I'm going to call Grace and ask her. She knows the information. It's, you know, she's the expert. Let's bring her in.
And it's so empowering to the people that are included.
Absolutely. And it gives them more of a chance to lead, and whether that be, you know, and it's applicable to all different functions within a corporation. But I think we got to be more all in on how we approach that, because, again, people can sometimes be so consumed by their own ego and having to feeling like they need to know everything, because that's in a lot of ways that's been what's modeled for them. So they haven't seen any other way. I've been part of a lot of different entrepreneurial teams, and you know, in a smaller corporation or nonprofit or community-based organizations, you don't have that luxury of lots of different levels. You know, people are wearing multiple hats and they need to answer questions in real time, and you kind of learn some efficiency from that.
Right. And sometimes I think it comes from fear too, don't you? That people have learned through the years that they got caught when they didn't know the answer. So it's giving people permission to say, I don't know.
Exactly. Or we made a call and we were wrong, but here's what we learned. I mean, that's the other thing, is just being comfortable with being wrong and making mistakes and then moving on. I mean, that's actually a big part of our team philosophy in commercial engines at Pratt & Whitney is how do you face into mistakes and address them as a team, rather than burying them and hoping they go away. You know, we have to do that every day, because when you're launching breakthrough technologies, not everything is going to go 100% right. And so you have to adapt in real time.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see that you actually have an undergrad in leadership studies. And I was curious, now that you've had all this leadership experience, what was surprising to you? Like, what didn't go the way the book said it would?
So I was, you know, and again, listening to some of the folks you've interviewed, I studied Meg Wheatley as an undergrad. I went to the University of Richmond. So I just remember just being so excited to learn about systems thinking. And, you know, we were privileged to learn from James McGregor Burns and a lot of famous leadership philosophers and practitioners. But like you said, leadership in a book versus how it plays out every day is very different. I think, you know, one of the things that's become more clear to me is just, you know, change takes time and people adopt and embrace change differently and just being comfortable with that I think my expectations for a vision for what's possible versus when it actually becomes possible, depending on the setting, can take a long time. And just knowing that, you know, you're not going to have 100% of the people there, but you got to keep moving and just being okay with, you know, not having everybody with you and kind of facing into that and still move and keep things moving. So just the pace of change, I think, is, it can be demoralizing at times, but it's also something you just got to accept.
Yeah, that's for sure. And so where do you find your inspiration?
The biggest source of inspiration for me is on the home front. So our kids are 11, 8, and 6, and their openness, their honesty, their capacity to learn and love is just inspiring every day. You know, our house around right after dinner time around 7 turns into kind of like a music session. My wife is a gifted vocalist and the kids have picked up some of her great qualities. So the viola's going, the piano's going, the flute's going, random drums going.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And they just love to learn. So watching how fast they learn and how quickly they adapt is always inspiring. I'd say the other just thing I'm pretty inspired by and find a lot of satisfaction is just my neighborhood. We moved to Farmington about 3 years ago and we're really close to Hartford, which is a very vibrant city with a lot of things going on. And
right.
One of the kind of exciting things I've been reading and learning about lately is David Brooks, who's a famous columnist from the New York Times, is working on a project called The Social Fabric. And one of the themes that he's talking about that I think is relevant to all of us is what are we doing to invest in our neighborhoods? And in a time where suicide rates are higher and people's levels of loneliness are higher than it's ever been, there's some simple solutions right in front of us. Are we talking to our neighbors? Are we inviting them over to dinner? Are we playing with them and doing fun stuff together? And in a place with like Hartford, where there's awesome arts and great sports and things to do and places to serve, you know, are we taking advantage of that? So it's on all of us to kind of step it up in terms of how we're investing in our neighborhood with our time and our energy. So I'm lucky to feel like I can do that all the time.
And it's just that whole importance of community, right? That's becoming so lost.
Yeah, we're more isolated and we don't need to be. And when you get out there and put yourself out there, whether it be a simple walk around your neighborhood or talking to people, it can be breakthrough and you feel so much more connected.
And don't you think that's true in a company as well? Like, companies can be a fabulous community if we really take care of our neighbors.
We do. And we have that opportunity. And that's why, I mean, again, one of the things that I think really differentiates Pratt & Whitney is our people. And people have stuck at the company for so long because of those social interactions, because they feel like their teammates have their back, because they feel like the company has their back. And we, you know, we've created these great jobs, but, you know, you think about all the hours we invest in our jobs. We spend more time with the folks in our company than we do with our own family and friends. So are we making our days in our own local neighborhoods at work enjoyable just by, you know, taking care of each other? And so that's so important and pretty easy to do just by, you know, kind of looking up and looking around and checking in with each other.
And John, so you know the name of this podcast is Let Go and Lead. So I, of course, have to ask you, what do you think leaders most need to let go of?
I think the biggest thing is just ego and credit. The more we can operate as one team and how can I and how can we best serve the needs of the team, you can just accomplish so much more when you don't care who gets credit and you just fill the role that the team needs you to fill. And can be flexible and adaptable. And again, that coming back to that question, you know, how can I serve the team? What are you great at? How do we work together? those basics can go a long way rather than what am I about and how can I make sure I get this? It's just inefficient and a waste of time and holds a lot of companies and teams back because people are too into themselves and what it means for them rather than what it means for the team as a whole or the company as a whole.
How are you approaching the first weeks on your new job?
You know, the big thing that I'm spending kind of these first few days and few weeks doing is just literally listening sessions with the different team members to understand what's going on and what's working and what can be improved. But one theme that I see here, but have seen in other contexts is just making sure folks are on the same page and understanding each other. The biggest thing again, and we started here, but is trust. So how I measure success, it's just like, and I just had my, my marketing team just gave me a nice send off yesterday and we shared poems with each other. Cause a lot of times I'll share poems at work. And I think about when I first started and they were like, who is this guy that just came into our first meeting and shared a poem? And now yesterday where they're sharing poems with me and teasing me in a great way, but also completely making me feel appreciated is just, so I think the message that I learned from my marketing team and will share with my new team is we all have tons of way to teach each other. And so I'm just always surprised at people's capacity to lead and grow. And I'm excited by what we're going to accomplish over the next 3 months and 6 months, but it comes from people just kind of being all in. And I had a marketing team that was all in, and 2 days into getting to know this digital team, they're all in. So I just want them to know, you know, that I have their back both as a coach and as a teammate. And so the more we can make sure each other feel supported and appreciated, and it sounds simple, but we don't take enough time at work to thank each other for the great work that everybody does. We kind of sometimes skip over that because we have a new project to work on, but I am so thankful for the people I get to work with every day and what they teach me and what I get to learn.
What advice would you give to somebody who has something they really believe you need to know and they don't know how to bring it forward?
Yeah, I really hope that's not the case because, but it's just share it and keep sharing it. And because don't like, I just have seen so many people in companies that have been shut down or feel shut down and just stick with it. Cause someone's going to listen and understand you. And again, corporations can be rough. But that's why we need to listen to each other and appreciate each other, because if you don't feel like you're heard, you can only keep banging your head against the wall too many times before you just shut down. And there's too many great ideas. There's too much great expertise at our companies to shut people down. They absolutely need to be heard.
And what else do you think I should have asked you? Or what would you like me to ask you?
I think one of the things that at least I've been personally working on a lot that I think is really hard is, and you got at it a little bit with leadership theory, but how do we actually lead change within ourselves? And on a personal note, you know, I think about how active I was in college and in my 20s with sports and things like that. And then like health-wise, trying to stay consistent with exercise or eating well. And, you know, there's all kinds of methodologies, but one of the things I think is pretty cool and I'm still learning is how do you find the habits that work really well for you and adapt them to help you lead change within yourself? So that's one of the things that we didn't talk much about, but has been breakthrough for me. Simple things like meditating, simple things like, you know, just creating time in the day to reflect. Like I still am on my journey in learning that stuff, but they help me have more energy and help me do a better job kind of every day on the home front and at work.
Well, John, thank you so much for your time. This was a terrific just chance to discuss this with you and get to know you.
No, thank you. And I look forward to visiting you and the team some point when I'm out in Chicago.
I'd like to recap several of John's key leadership practices. First, elevate the expert. Have the person with the knowledge do the talking. Second, create opportunities for your team to connect. By hosting Ignite sessions, Pratt & Whitney leaders have designed a forum for associates at all levels to engage and contribute on a level playing field. Third, create a team philosophy. With true input, collaboration, and testing, you can co-create a shared team philosophy that's real and true for all. Fourth, democratize insights. By sharing strategic goals, financial commitments, and customer insights with your broader team, you can build greater trust and cultivate an all-in mentality. It was such a pleasure to have John with us. If you're enjoying Let Go and Lead, please subscribe or leave a review. And don't forget to visit letgoandlead.com for our episode discussion guides. They include reflection questions that help you apply what you heard from our guests to your own role as a leader. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.